all their lives, Stanton said, and assuming that is a normal quantity found everywhere in the world. And then one day, stumbling unexpectedly on the ocean, Donovan added, waving at the ether crystal. I grunted, somewhat better understanding the mental struggle that the two mages were experiencing. What would the ley line itself be in that case? The sun, Donovan replied with a shake of his head. Even if that disrupts the water analogy somewhat. It is apt, regardless, Stanton agreed, nodding at the mage before returning his attention to me. Was there something that you needed from us, Larian, or were you just passing through? Actually, I had some news to share, I said, pausing for a moment as I pulled both Halcyon's and mine sketches out from my inventory, offering the both of them to the mages. We found another runestone in the grove today. You did! Donovan shouted as he lunged forward to grab the sketch out of my hand, Stanton only barely managing to restrain himself from doing the same as he too took the proffered sheet of paper and inspected it. Silence fell over the chamber as the two mages excitedly examined the sketches that I had handed to them, before almost simultaneously rushing over towards a stone table at one end of the room. Moving to follow the pair, I saw that there were several other papers scattered across its surface, one of them namely being the sketch of the first runestone. This is part of the same spell as the first one, Stanton stated as he placed my newest sketch beside the one belonging to the first runestone, unable to completely hide the sense of wonder in his voice. Yet, looking at this, I still cannot fathom what it is actually supposed to do. It doesn't quite make sense. Me either, Donovan added, his voice mixed with both frustration and excitement as the pair shifted to make room for me at the table. However, this proves we are not seeing the whole spell notation. There must still be more out in the grove to be found. That's what Halcyon and I were now thinking, I replied, taking a look at the two sketches before me, slowly working my way through the notation, having only had memory to compare against while sketching the second stone. After a few minutes, I noticed that a portion of the notation repeated itself, namely the trailing edge of one sketch, mirroring the leading edge of the next, and said as much to the two mages. I had noticed that too, Donovan admitted, though I am not certain what to make of it. I think I do, I said while tapping my finger on the sketch thoughtfully. Halcyon and I copied the script exactly how it appears when they activate, as well as how it moves across the surface. How do you mean? Stanton asked, looking at me curiously. I remember you mentioning that the script moves across the runestone's face, but I admit I cannot picture that in my mind. Well, it is hard to explain without seeing it yourself, I said, struggling to find an example that the two mages would understand. But I'm starting to think that the script on this sketch, I paused to indicate the newer sketches that I had just shown the mages, travels over onto the runestone that bore the first sketch, I continued, pointing to the second piece of paper, and repeats itself there. Which means we can disregard the repetition in the notation, Stanton said slowly, putting his hand on the sketch to cover a portion of it. That would certainly lend more context, Donovan said, nodding slowly at our logic. Let me redraw it, I stated, feeling a spark of excitement kindle within me as I grabbed a blank piece of paper and a stick of charcoal, then began to combine the two sketches together, removing the duplicate portion of the notation. Paying special care to detail, it took me several minutes to combine the drawings as the two mages watched wordlessly over my shoulder. When I was finally done, I set the now shorter piece of charcoal down and took in the newly made sketch. It's a containment spell? I asked aloud after staring at the script for a few moments and trying to piece together the incomplete script. I believe so, Donovan replied, turning his head to the side as he stared at the paper. But to contain what? The ley line? I suggested, my heart suddenly pounding in my chest. If this spell was capable of affecting the ley line, then we might actually have a way to seal it when we finally managed to cut a path towards it. What else would there be to contain? Well, yes, Donovan agreed, but then pointed towards a section of the script located directly in the center of it. But there's something else, too. I can't make sense of it. The three of us paused as we inspected the area that the mage had indicated. It is certainly particular, Stanton mused. It seems to somehow allow the spell to adjust itself without a caster's input, but how, I cannot say. If this were somehow used to contain or interact with a ley line, then it would make sense that it should be able to react automatically, I reasoned, glancing between the two mages. We have no idea how complicated managing a tapped ley line could have been. I can't imagine that it was easy. Or safe, I added as an afterthought.
You think this spell may have been a control mechanism of some sort, then?
Donovan asked me. Maybe, I replied with a shrug. If the Nefar were using the ley line for power, then having a way to control it would have been critical.
I'm inclined to agree, Stanton said. All that we have uncovered about the Nefar over the decades has pointed to them being thorough in their designs. They would not have left something like containing the ley line to chance.
Then I guess we're going to have to go back into the grove and find the rest of the runestones, I stated, looking down at my newly updated sketch. This is the first lead we have in actually fixing the ley line. Now we just need to actually find a way to get to it.
I thought you said things were going well on that front, Donovan asked, sounding slightly concerned.
They are going well enough, but slowly, I sighed. We haven't even managed to make it halfway through the jungle yet, and that still leaves a substantial portion of it for us to cover, the creatures inhabiting it notwithstanding.
I don't envy you and your guild in their task, Lyrian, Stanton said in a grave tone. I've noticed that many of the adventurers that pass through these chambers en route to the grove always seem to have curses directed at the beast at the edge of their lips.
For good reason, I acknowledged. That thing is the largest reason for our slow process so far. Sooner or later, we're all going to have to try and hunt it down.
Do you really think you'll be able to kill it? Donovan asked. From the tales we've heard.
I don't know. I admitted, as I stepped away from the table, memories of the creature floating to the forefront of my mind. But we need to try, because one way or another, I paused for a moment as I looked both mages in the eye. Aldford's, and maybe even Iberia's fate, depends on it.
Chapter 44 Thursday, March 28th. 2047, 5:58 p.m. The Twilight Grove.
A deafening shriek filled the air as a gray-colored blur slammed into me faster than I could react, the impact knocking me off my feet and sending me falling backward. Landing heavily, I felt the air rush out of my chest, followed closely behind by a sharp stabbing pain in my hip as the gray shape leaped on top of me. Argh! I barked in a mix of pain and defiance at the screaming creature now straddling me. The horror that was a twilight gloom stalker. Resembling something akin to a praying mantis, the nearly 6-foot-tall gloom stalker towered over its diminutive cousin, its greater size lending it an infinitely more menacing appearance, which was only further enhanced by the presence of 2 wickedly serrated blades attached to its arms. But despite its massive increase in size, whatever passed for Mother Nature in the Twilight Grove hadn't yet finished with the creature. Deciding to cover the bipedal creature in an array of sharp and cruel-looking barbs, making being in proximity to it an exercise in pain. It was those very barbs that happened to limit the extent of my options at the moment, giving me the choice of accepting my fate and letting the gloom stalker bury its sharp claws in my chest before feasting on my remains, or to try and stop its claws by grasping hold of its barb-covered forearms before the blades began plunging into my chest, likely delaying the inevitable by a few seconds at most, at the cost of great personal pain. Needless to say, I took the second option.
Gargh! Fuck!
The curse practically flew out of my mouth as I grabbed hold of what passed for the gloomstalker's arms, willingly impaling my hands onto the sharp spines that protruded from them.
This is what I get for losing Splinter,
I berated myself mentally, trying to focus past my newest set of injuries as I caught the descending limbs and pushed against them, just barely managing to stop the gloomstalker's claws inches away from my chest. Exhausted from what had already been a fatiguing battle, it was all I could do to keep the claws at bay, my muscles straining under the creature's superior positioning. Hissing angrily at my desperate attempt to preserve my life, the gloomstalker threw its weight against me, forcing the barbs even deeper into my palms and causing its claws to sink just a bit closer to my chest, Reeling from the pain but unwilling to surrender, I clenched my hands as tightly as I could around the creature's arms, feeling blood begin to ooze into my gloves. Feeling the strength drain away from my arms, I knew that I wouldn't be able to keep the creature at bay forever, a point driven home as one of the two blades sank low enough to pierce flesh.
I guess this is gonna hurt even more than it already does,
I thought grimly, while gritting my teeth in preparation for what I was about to do, a desperate idea having come to mind. Taking a heartbeat to brace myself, I channeled shocking touch into my hands and let it flow into the Gloomstalker before I could have second thoughts. Instantly, the massive insect began to thrash in my grip as its body seized, the motion from its movement causing the already intense pain in my hands to intensify. Yet despite the agony, I did my best to hold on to the creature, using the opportunity to shift my legs out from under it and brace both of my feet against its chest. Not letting up in the only avenue of attack I had, I sent another shocking touch into the Gloomstalker, causing it to hiss and thrash wildly for a second time as I began to push it away with my legs. Enraged by my attempt to get away, the oversized bug threw itself against me even harder, its instinct-driven mind unable to fully comprehend the extent of my strategy. As I extended my legs, I maintained my steady grip on the two arms that I grabbed hold of, no longer needing to push against them to keep the creature at bay. Instead, I began to force the creature away from me with my legs, the movement causing its arms to stretch until they were fully extended. It was only when the sound of cracking chitin sounded from the two limbs that the Gloomstalker finally understood what I was doing, its angry attempts to close with me suddenly turning to a panicked thrash. With a burst of energy, I savagely yanked on the creature's two arms while thrusting my legs against its chest with every ounce of strength I possessed. Holding for the briefest of moments, I felt the Gloomstalker's arms resist my pull before suddenly giving way with a sickening crack as the limbs that I was holding tore free of its body. With all resistance vanishing, the Gloomstalker fell away from me in a spray of black ichor, a wailing cry of pain echoing up a heartbeat after. I yelped in pain as I lay gasping on the ground, the Gloomstalker temporarily forgotten, while I looked at the bloody mess that was my hands. The barbed spines of the creature's arms had rent my palms wickedly, causing a steady flow of blood to pour from them.
Better my hands looking like this, rather than my face or chest, I thought acidly, as I forced my hands to unclench before gingerly pulling them free of the barbed limbs, hissing softly in the process.
Once my hands were free, I forced myself back up onto my feet and turned my attention towards the now writhing Gloomstalker a short distance away from me, seeing a dark well of ichor that had pooled around its body. Staggering over to the dying creature, I didn't hesitate in delivering a savage stomp to the creature's head to put it out of its misery, all while I fished to open my belt pocket, finding it difficult to open with my torn hand. Finally managing to get the clasp undone, I reached inside and pulled out a single glass vial filled with the familiar red liquid that every adventurer ever born recognized. Thumbing off the stopper, I brought the vial up to my mouth, watching a small description appear in my vision as I tipped it back. Minor healing potion. Item class magical. Item quality average plus 0%. Weight 0.1 kilograms. Use? Regenerate 250 hit points over the next 10 seconds. Downing the potion with barely a second thought, I immediately felt the strange liquid begin to do its work on my torn hands, and the rest of my body, the bruised and broken flesh rapidly knitting itself together. Breathing an intense sigh of relief, I allowed myself a momentary pause, which was promptly interrupted by Lazarus's voice.
"Are you okay, Lyrian?"
he shouted, pitching his voice over a shrieking cry similar to the one that I'd heard just seconds earlier.
Because if you are, we could sure as hell use your help over here again! Ah, shit! Ransom!
Whirling at the half-giant's voice, just as a loud burst of magic drowned out everything around me, I caught the tail end of a flaming blast that filled the jungle with smoke and the smell of burning vegetation. But before I could even begin to think about moving, a shape that I recognized all too well staggered backward out of the acrid mist, its body charred from the recent blast of magic, as well as several more wounds that I didn't recall seeing from earlier in the battle.
Damn! That thing is still standing!
I thought incredulously as a tag appeared in my vision, pointing towards the still-smoking creature as it forced itself back fully onto its feet, where it then towered nearly half a body length over me. Twilight Grove Deathstalker. Rare boss. Level 19.
making the Gloomstalker that I had just killed appear like an innocent kitten in comparison. The Deathstalker was a paragon of its kind, improving on everything that defined its already vicious siblings and turning it into a veritable whirlwind of carnage. Carnage being exactly what it had wrought since its arrival. Pushing aside the chaotic memories of earlier in the fight for the time being, I instead forced myself to focus my attention on the ferocious creature as my eyes searched for the one thing I needed to get back into the fight, Splinter. Good. It's still there. I breathed with a sigh of relief as I spotted the hilt of my blade protruding from the side of the Deathstalker's shoulder, exactly where I'd thrust it into before being unceremoniously slapped away by a flailing claw and sent tumbling across the ground. Now, to get it back without somehow killing myself, Conjuring and discarding half a dozen ideas, I quickly came up with a plan that I was reasonably confident wouldn't result in my untimely end. I forced myself to sprint towards the creature, watching its movements carefully as I closed. With it still reeling from whatever magic ransom it unleashed, I only had precious seconds to recover my weapon before it resumed its rampage. Reaching the point of no return a short distance away from the Deathstalker, I leaped high into the air and triggered Blink Step, my vision blurring into colors before suddenly snapping back into focus an arm's length away from the creature's back. With momentum still carrying me forward, I barely had enough time to process my change in scenery before I slammed into the giant insect, causing it to stagger forward from the impact. Pushing aside the sharp stab of countless barbs that covered the creature's carapace, I threw one of my arms around the Deathstalker's neck to keep me from falling, while my other reached out to grasp Splinter's cool hilt. Just as my hand wrapped itself around the sword's base, I heard a shrieking hiss erupt from the Deathstalker as it twisted violently in pain.
"Not quite what I was expecting you to do, Lyrian," I heard Lazarus shout from somewhere in front of me. "But hell, if it works!"
"Yeah, well, I didn't have much of a choice," I replied, struggling to hold on to the creature as it began to thrash in an attempt to dislodge me.
"I had to get my damn sword back!" "Well, now that you have it, put it to use,"
Lazarus called back, the ichor-covered tip of his sword appearing briefly in my vision as he swung it towards the Deathstalker.
"Ransom and your cat are dealing with another two of the smaller bugs!"
"Shit!"
I cursed softly, realizing that I hadn't heard anything from Amaranth since the battle had started, before having been jumped by a Gloomstalker the moment that I had recovered from my landing. Yanking Splinter free of the Deathstalker's shoulder with a spray of ichor, I mentally reached out towards my familiar.
"Amaranth, how's your side of the fight going?"
I asked the cat as I stabbed Splinter back into the Deathstalker's body, sensing through our bond that my familiar had been injured several times.
"Poorly,"
he replied in an angry tone.
"It's all I can do to keep these predators off ransom if we do not get some assistance soon."
"Damn, okay, just hold out for a bit longer,"
I told Amaranth, the urgency in his voice prompting me to channel a shocking touch into my blade before I pulled it free a second time.
"Lazarus and I just need to kill the Deathstalker."
Receiving a mental growl in acknowledgement, I was forced to turn the entirety of my attention back towards the writhing creature that I was currently hanging off, as it worked itself up into a frenzy. Clinging on for dear life, I felt the flesh on my chest and the arm that I'd wrapped around the Deathstalker's neck tear painfully as it desperately attempted to shake me loose, the creature's cruel barbs digging into me. Maintaining my grip on Splinter's hilt, I sent yet another surge of electricity into the nightmare-sized creature, feeling it jerk wildly as its muscles spasmed. Taking advantage of my distraction, I felt a heavy blow from Lazarus slam into the Deathstalker, the impact causing the creature to suddenly buckle and drop down to a knee. Hissing at the unexpected movement and the pain that it caused, I found myself staring almost directly into Lazarus's face over the creature's shoulder, a bleeding cut across his brow having covered it almost completely in blood. Then, as quickly as he had appeared, he vanished, forced to duck under the Deathstalker's sweeping claw as it struggled to buy some time to regain its balance. Time that I wasn't about to give it. Tearing my sword free once more from the Deathstalker's back, I tightened my grip on the blade's hilt and then yanked myself upwards with the arm I'd slung around the creature's neck in one explosive burst of energy. Letting out a ragged gasp as the spines continued to dig into my body, I thrust Splinter into the base of the Deathstalker's head, using both my strength and momentum to drive it upwards through the hard chitin until I felt the blade exit through the other side. At once, I felt the creature go limp from the blow, the flailing movements of its body losing all sense of coordination as it pitched forward, just barely catching itself on its claws before it hit the ground.
Gritting my teeth at the Death Stalker's stubbornness, I twisted Splinter savagely and delivered a final shocking touch, all resistance fading away from the creature as the electricity traveled the length of my blade and coursed into its skull. Landing on the ground with a heavy thud, I felt the creature deflate under me as a pair of timely prompts appeared in my combat log. You have slain a Twilight Grove Death Stalker. You have gained experience.
Finally!
Lazarus rasped from nearby, causing my head to spin in the direction of his voice and spotting the man leaning heavily on his glass-steel sword while holding a badly bleeding arm to his chest. The Death Stalker had clearly managed to land its fair share of blows on the half-giant during the fight.
I was starting to think I'd never see that fucker dead.
It was a close thing,
I agreed in an exhausted tone, hearing a vicious growl from Amaranth echo out from the jungle, reminding me that the fight wasn't quite over yet. Pulling both myself and Splinter free from the dead creature, I couldn't help but wince from the newest round of wounds that covered my body.
You gonna be able to keep up with that arm?
Just watch me,
Lazarus growled, pulling his large weapon free of the ground.
Let's go.
Rushing towards the sounds of the battle, it only took us a heartbeat to find both Amaranth and Ransom fighting back to back against the two remaining Gloomstalkers, and even less time for us to enter the fray. With my vision blurring into a spray of colors as I triggered Blinkstep, I arrived behind the Gloomstalker threatening my familiar with Splinter already in motion, blade's razor-sharp edge slicing through the creature's elbow as if it were paper.
Finally!
Amaranth's voice echoed through my head as the insect-like creature recoiled in pain from my attack, giving the cat the opportunity to pounce on the creature and take it to the ground. Landing heavily on top of it, I heard the familiar crack of chitin as Amaranth drove his weight down onto the Gloomstalker, seconds before his powerful jaws found its neck, easily piercing through the hard shell that protected it. With another crack, the cat snapped his head viciously, putting an end to the wounded mantis. The single moment of opportunity being all that he needed to turn the tables on the creature. Glancing up from the sudden and brutal end, I managed to look up just in time to see Lazarus's sweeping blade catch the other Gloomstalker directly in the side of the head. The impact took the surprised creature off its feet and sprawling onto the ground, where a bright blast of fire from Ransom and a stab from Lazarus put it out of its misery. Just like that, the fight was over.
Damn!
Ransom heaved with exhaustion, his posture slightly bent over with both hands on his knees as he tried to catch a breath.
That was close. Too close, shit.
You're telling me? I said with an equally exhausted sigh as I considered our losses. Out of the group of 8 adventurers that we had started the day with, only the 3 of us were left standing, in addition to Amaranth, of course.
Anyone see what happened during the ambush? I didn't even see the others go down.
The big one dropped down on us from above,
Ransom replied, shaking his head at the memory.
It landed with both claws in Cadmus, then sliced Mir apart a second after. They really didn't have a chance after that.
The half-orc warlock shook his head and motioned to the burnt and trampled vegetation surrounding us, as if that explained everything.
I saw Aenea go down, Lazarus added in a quiet voice. We got caught in a no-win situation after the second pack of Gloomstalkers rushed out of the jungle. She managed to buy Connor, Thorne, and I enough time to take the first pack down, while you and Amaranth kept the Deathstalker busy.
There was a second pack of those things?
I asked, completely dumbfounded that I missed them in the chaos.
I didn't even see them!
At least 6 of them, according to my combat log,
Ransom confirmed, his breathing having finally evened out.
After Aenea went down, it all became a scramble, and something got Connor soon after. I never saw what happened to Thorne, though.
He stepped in front of a blow meant for me,
Amaranth told me, his mental voice sounding low.
It would have certainly been my end.
And mine most likely, too, I added as an afterthought, realizing Thorne's train of thought. Amaranth's death would have likely weakened me past the point of being able to keep up with the Deathstalker, assuming the shock of his death hadn't caused me to freeze at an inopportune time in the first place.
Well,
Lazarus stated after a moment of silence,
we managed to kill the Deathstalker in the end, which means there's one less rare boss wandering this jungle.
Small victories, right? I said, trying to project a sense of optimism in my voice that I didn't quite feel.
Doesn't seem like it's our day for a runestone, though.
Not today, Ransom added in a disappointed tone. We should probably grab any drops from the creatures while we still can, then make our way back to the camp. After the beating we just took, going any further today is just asking for something else to jump us, if not the beast.
No complaints from me, I told the warlock while checking the arm that I'd used to hold on to the Deathstalker and realizing that my antics had seriously damaged the armor. Looks like I'm due for some repairs, too. This jungle isn't easy on the gear at all.
No, Lazarus agreed as he waved at the loot bag that now marked where the Deathstalker's corpse had just been a few moments earlier. About the only thing this place is good for is the experience bar. And loot, of course.
That sounds about right, I said with a dry laugh as I walked over to the bag and took a look inside, watching the items appear in my vision. Deathstalker Claw, Quantity 2, Item Class Magical, Item Quality Mastercraft, plus 20%, Durability 0 out of 0, Weight 2 kilograms. Deathstalker Fangs, Quantity 20, Item Class Magical, Item Quality, Mastercraft, plus 20%, Durability 0 out of 0. Weight, 4 kilograms. Deathstalker Chitin, Quantity, 10. Item Class, Magical. Item Quality, Mastercraft, plus 20%. Durability, 0 out of 0. Weight, 20 kilograms.
And we have even more crafting materials, I announced in an unsurprised voice, having grown used to the pattern that the game followed.
Choosing to lean on the realistic side of things, wild creatures in Ascend Online were never considerate enough to drop fully forged weapons and armor when they were killed.
Instead, choosing to consistently drop the raw materials needed to create something useful, relying on a crafter to give it shape.
Must be a sign of just how tired I am and how long this week has been if I'm complaining about having Mastercraft quality materials to craft with, I thought while rubbing my face, hearing both Ransom and Lazarus echo similar sentiments as they collected the loot belonging to the Gloomstalkers that had also been killed during the fight. But that's what barely 4 hours of sleep a night will get me. Much like the few days that had preceded it, the last 2 days had passed at a breakneck pace since the discovery of the second runestone. The promise of actually having a way to repair the ley line once we reached it, having prompted us to dive back into the Twilight Grove with renewed excitement, intent on pushing faster and farther into the jungle than we ever had in the days before. Yet, for all our exuberance, we found our efforts neatly curtailed by the second wave of creatures that inhabited the deeper yet unexplored section of the grove, their numbers and ferocity increasing the farther we traveled. While we had all expected that there would be challenges in pressing on ahead, any hope I had about being able to at least progress as quickly through the deeper portion of the jungle as we had its border region were dashed after the third Gloomstalker ambush hit us, just barely 30 feet away from where the first one had ended. Instead, I'd been forced to resign myself to a slow, grinding approach as we forced our way deeper into the jungle, whittling away at the seemingly endless horde of creatures that inhabited the place, buying every inch closer to the ley line with blood and sweat. Which really wouldn't be a problem for me if it wasn't for our damn deadline, I thought, feeling a slight scowl cross my face as I looked in the direction that I knew the ley line to be in. We don't know how long we have until the ley line is in danger of exploding, and our rest cycle is coming up fast. If we can't get this all sorted out by Monday morning, we're going to lose a day, and that'll only put us even further.
You coming, Lyrian?
Lazarus's voice interrupted my mental spiral, causing me to turn back in his direction and seeing that both he and Ransom were ready to leave.
Yeah, I replied, breathing out a deep sigh as I moved to follow the pair, Amaranth moving silently beside me. Just a little frustrated at the slow progress.
You call clawing your way up to level 18 in 6 days slow?
Ransom replied.
If we have another day like today, tomorrow, then I think we can all hit 19. If not, then the day after for sure.
I meant more progress through the jungle, I clarified despite nodding in agreement with the half-orc.
Believe me, Lyrian.
Lazarus stated, inclining his head to Ransom.
Neither of us are exactly thrilled to be here. You know full well that we'd rather be back in Iberia. But with that being said, levels are progressing here,
It's only a matter of time until we're cutting through these gloomstalkers like we do with the gremlin and trogs.
Time being the key word there, I pointed out.
I'll give you that, Lazarus allowed with a nod in my direction. But we're not exactly sitting on our asses here. And you forget that the rest of your guild, too, has been poking around the jungle. It's entirely possible that they've had more luck than us.
You mean finding and surviving a rare creature in the deep jungle isn't luck?
Ransom interjected with a note of humor in his voice.
2 days ago, that Deathstalker would have killed us.
2 days ago, that Deathstalker did kill me, Lazarus spat. There are going to be more than a few people back at the camp happy to hear that it's dead. Hey, by the way, I don't suppose you'd be able to throw a few of those chitin pieces my way. Believe it or not, I'm still wearing level 13 gear, and it's not exactly holding together anymore.
I know what you mean, I replied, glancing over at the half-giant's armor with a critical eye, spotting countless tears and scars on it. Staring at it for several seconds, I slowly considered what the man had just said before shaking my head and snorting.
Damn! I didn't really think about that.
Think about what?
Lazarus queried as he glanced downward.
My armor?
That we've essentially out-leveled everything that we're wearing, I said, bringing up my own character sheet to verify. Everything I'm wearing, with the exception of my sword, is still level 13.
I wouldn't say no to upgrading a few pieces, Lazarus said. We did get a fair bit of scraps from the early part of the ruins. And we've been collecting a hell of a lot of hide, leather, and other stuff from these grove creatures,
Ransom stated, an optimistic note sounding in his voice.
Do you think you'd be able to craft something useful for us from all that, Lyrian? Better gear could go a long way.
I mused thoughtfully, feeling a smile creep across my face as I mentally inventoried everything that we had found over the last few days, my mental frustration fading away under the impending excitement of crafting. You know what? I think I just might be able to come up with something.
Chapter 45. Our journey back to Camp Sentinel was largely uneventful. Inasmuch as a trio of troglodytes, a quartet of gremlins, and one very large quill bear could be called such. Yet compared to the gloomstalkers that we'd faced deeper in the jungle, they were all barely noticeable speed bumps on our return route back to the camp, once again reinforcing just how much progress we had made to be able to deal with them so effortlessly. Lazarus does have a point, I guess, I thought as I paused to look back at the sprawling jungle that filled the Twilight Grove from the high vantage point at the camp's entrance. It's not nearly as bad traveling through the border parts of the jungle. At worst, anyone will only have to deal with a handful of creatures at a time now, instead of the huge swarms that roamed around during the first few days in the grove, when all the creatures were trying to viciously defend their territory. Staring out at the azure-tinted cavern for a few more seconds, I then turned away from the sight and began walking towards the tunnel, seeing both Lazarus and Ransom waiting for me.
"Are you planning on heading back up to Aldford to craft?"
the half-giant prompted me as I rejoined the pair. "No, I think I have enough materials down here already," I replied, thinking over everything that I had in my pack. "The crafting area that Jenkins set up down here is fairly comprehensive and should suit my needs for the time being. He even managed to get a small forge down here, too."
"He did?"
Ransom asked, giving me a surprised glance.
"Wouldn't that foul the air in here?"
"Normally I'd say yes," I answered the man with a shrug. "But it doesn't seem to be causing any problems. I guess the air flowing upwards through the open route and whatever magic the Nefar enchanted the ruins with seemed to be enough in keeping the air breathable. At least that's the only thing that I can think of. With how sprawling and sealed off this whole installation is, they must have taken that into account somehow."
"Makes sense," Lazarus agreed. "If not, then there's that whole jungle of plants and stuff that's probably producing air for everything to breathe."
"Assuming that magically fueled plants even produce oxygen," I said while shaking my head. "I don't even know."
"And here I thought you were the local ether biology expert, Lyrian," Lazarus said with a chuckle.
"Falling into a ley line hardly makes you an expert," I replied, snorting at the newly coined name. "If anything, that should be a clear warning sign that I don't know what I'm doing. Besides, I'm pretty sure I flunked biology."
"So mitochondria isn't the monosource of the cell, then?" Ransom asked in a sarcastic tone, flashing a wide smile at me.
"Huh,
I couldn't help but laugh, shaking my head at the warlock. I didn't flunk that badly.
The next few minutes passed in a blur as we continued through the tunnel and entered the camp, the stress of the day gradually unwinding with each step. Filled with a fairly sized crowd, we were far from the first party to return back for the day, but nowhere near to being the last. Scanning the camp activity with a practiced eye, I gauged that easily half, if not closer to two-thirds, of the regular adventurers that normally filled the camp were still out exploring the grove, many of which would start trickling back in as the evening wore on.
"Well, Ransom and I are going to keep heading towards the surface and back to Aldford for a bit," Lazarus said as we all came to a stop just outside the camp entrance. "I don't know about you, but I'm long overdue to catch at least a glimpse of the sun before it sets, and some fresh air before coming back down."
"I don't blame you," I replied, giving the pair an understanding nod. While I wasn't quite missing the daylight myself, I knew what sort of psychological effect the sun had in perking someone's mood, and couldn't begrudge him the break. "Just come find me in the crafting area when you come back, so I can take some measurements for your armor. It's going to take me a while to get myself sorted out anyway, so no rush."
"Great!" Ransom exclaimed excitedly. "Thanks!"
"No problem," I said, seeing Lazarus nod in sympathy to the half-orc's sentiments. "I'll see you guys later."
"Perhaps now would be a good time to mention that I am hungry again,"
Amaranth told me as Lazarus and Ransom departed, cutting through the camp and towards the route that led to the surface.
"The Gloomstalkers were adequate prey, yet hardly satisfying to one's stomach."
"Sure," I replied, taking a single step in the direction of the camp butchers, when Amaranth's voice caused me to stop.
"Actually,"
he said, his voice taking on a hesitant tone,
"I am interested in purchasing the meal myself."
"Wait, what?" I said. Amaranth's reply taking me so far off guard that I had to process it a second time. "You want to buy your own food?"
"I believe that there is value in learning this version of hunting,"
my familiar replied, his eyes darting up to look at mine.
"I have noticed the shiny metals you adventurers trade amongst yourselves in exchange for trinkets and food, and I am curious to attempt the same for myself."
"Well, sure," I replied to the cat, wrapping my head around the idea and not seeing any logical reason to refuse. "I mean, I don't see why you couldn't, though you not being able to talk may be a bit of a barrier."
"I have considered this,"
Amaranth replied in a confident voice,
"and I have come to the conclusion that hunger transcends language."
"I suppose it does," I said, unable to completely disagree with the cat's logic. "How are you going to go about buying the food you want?"
"My plan was to present some of the shiny metals to the merchant, I believe they're called,"
Amaranth informed me.
"Then I was going to indicate which cut of meat I wished to devour. From there, I believe that my intentions would be quite clear."
"Maybe," I thought, thinking of several ways that Amaranth's plan could go wrong. Yet if he truly wanted to learn how to shop, of all things, I wasn't about to stand in his way. "I think that should work," I told the cat. "Or at least communicate enough for you to be able to improvise."
"Good,"
Amaranth replied, bobbing his head in a feline approximation of a nod.
"Now, in order for me to execute this plan, I require some of those shiny metals that you adventurers carry. They are called coins, correct?"
"That's right," I said to the cat as I caught the implied meaning in his mental voice and pulled out my coin pouch, counting out a handful of silver. Taking a moment to transfer the coins into a smaller bag, I offered it to my familiar, who gently took it from my hand with his mouth. "This should be enough to buy you two pieces, assuming you want that much."
"Perhaps,"
Amaranth said, cocking his head to the side with a coin pouch in his mouth.
"We will see if I am successful first."
"Well, if you need any help, I'll be over in the crafting area," I told my familiar and received an acknowledging flick of the ear in return as he turned away from me, his tail hanging high in the air with confidence. "I guess if I don't hear any screaming or panic, I'll just assume things are going well." I thought, slowly trying to accustom myself to my familiar sudden display of independence. It hadn't escaped me that Amaranth's personality was becoming more developed and nuanced as the weeks wore on, but having him expressing the desire to buy something was the last thing that I had expected to hear. But not a bad thing, either, I added a heartbeat later, followed by a mental shrug, as I began to walk through the camp and towards the crafting area that Jenkins had set up. I was hoping that I'd be able to catch the man at some point today, having barely had a chance to exchange more than a dozen words with him over the last 2 days. Ever since he found out that there were veins of metal readily available in the cave, both he and Rit had dropped almost everything in favor of supporting the group of adventurers that had claimed it, and ensured that Aldfer got the majority of the ore for its construction efforts. That last move hadn't exactly won them any favors with the rest of Aldford's adventurers, who also wanted all the metal that they could get their hands on. But since Rit was willing to buy ore at above market rates and was bankrolled by Aldford's rather deep coffers, there was little that they could do about it, short of going out and prospecting themselves. Unfortunately, however, my hopes were dashed when I arrived at the makeshift crafting area and found it to be completely empty, with neither Rit nor Jenkins anywhere in sight. With how much work I have ahead of me, I'm sure I'll run into them if I stay put, I said wistfully as I dropped my pack on the ground and began to unfasten my armor, unable to conceal the grimace that crossed my face as I ran my fingers over the seemingly countless broken rings that comprised the chainmail. I think at this point it'll probably be easier for me to dismantle the majority of this for scrap than it will be to fix it. With practiced ease, I peeled the layers of the now well-worn armor off me and laid it out on an empty table, carefully inspecting the damage that 6 days of practically non-stop adventuring had wrought. This leather is going to have to go, I told myself as I appraised the now blood-stained hide that comprised the shoulder portions of the armor, my fingers tracing a deep scar in the leather that marked one particularly close call the day before. I'll have to relink some of this chain, but I think I should be able to salvage a good portion of it. Whispering softly to myself as I continued my inspection, I felt the wheels in my head begin to turn as I assessed what sections of armor were worth salvaging and just how I could reuse them going forward. Once I had a better idea of what I was working with, I then turned to my pack and began to inventory the crafting material that I had on hand, watching all the items that I had accumulated in the Nefarian ruins and the Twilight Grove appear in my vision one by one. Blackened chainmail scrap, times 5. Gremlin leather, times 23. Gremlin teeth, times 76. Troglodyte hide, times 46. Troglodyte claw, times 31. Large razor quill, times 12. Small barbed quill, times 34. Gloomstalker chitin, times 25. Deathstalker chitin, times 10. Deathstalker claw, times 2. Deathstalker fangs, times 20. Iron ingot, times 20. Nefarian sentinel's ether core, times 1. Huh. I grunted as I fished through the pack. I forgot I still have a few chainmail scraps that we found in the dungeon. I guess that'll make repairs easier. I can also use the trog hide to replace the leather and the armor easily enough, assuming that Jenkins hasn't used up all that alcohol that Martin sent down the other day. I felt my hand land on something that I wasn't expecting and pulled it out of the pack, revealing a glowing crystal. Ah! I forgot Freya gave the ether core back to me. Turning the object over in my hand, I inspected the crystal carefully as I considered the best way to put it to use. It wasn't exactly doing anything useful sitting in the bottom of my bag, and I was all too familiar with the idea of saving a rare item indefinitely while waiting for the perfect chance to use it. "You're making a new set of armor for yourself anyway, Mark?" the pragmatic portion of my subconscious told me as I considered the item and the rather substantial bonus that it gave to all attributes. Given how brutal the grove has been so far, you're going to need every single edge you can get going forward. Plus, it's not like you're getting any closer to figuring out how to forge larger pieces with that ether-touched iron back in Aldford, either. Isn't that the truth? I grunted to myself as memories of the uncooperative metal came to mind. Ever since crafting Splinter, I hadn't had the time, or to be completely honest with myself, the inclination to try experimenting with the ether-touched metal. Having had a few days to think about it, I was confident that there was a fundamental step in the forging process that I was missing. And as satisfying as it would be to solve it, doing so simply wasn't currently the best use of my time. Right now, everything depended on us getting to the ley line and somehow finding out a way to seal the rupture before it reached critical mass. Only then, and once we were all confident that the danger of the town and surrounding region exploding in a cataclysmic storm of raw magic had passed, was I going to try working with the strange metal again. Which meant that at the moment, I was limited to the items I had on hand. Which also means that I'd be a fool not to use this, I said to myself, still staring at the ether core in my hand as I completed my rationalization process for using the item. Confident in my decision, I then set the ether core in the center of a clear table and began to pull the other items I would need out of my pack, placing several pieces of troglodyte hide, a handful of iron ingots, all the spare chainmail scraps, and two large pieces of Deathstalker chitin around the crystal.
All right,
I announced to the air around me as I rubbed my hands together in anticipation before reaching out to grab a pair of heavy pliers I would need to disassemble my old set of armor. Let's get started. Diving into my work with fervor, the next 2 hours passed by in a blur as I began to craft myself a new set of armor, marked only by Amaranth's report that he had been victorious in his hunting attempt, which was then soon followed by a mental snore as he began to digest his meal. Slowly but surely, as the hours passed, my new armor began to take shape as I fashioned each piece in sequence, disassembling the old armor's piece, then immediately using what I'd salvaged on its replacement and adding in the new materials that I'd set aside, where appropriate. It was towards the end of those 2 hours when I finally found myself finishing the final and largest section of my new armor set, namely being the chest piece. It was a roughly hammered cuirass with two large plates that would protect both my chest and back, linked together by a double layer of chainmail and chitin that gave some flexibility to the piece, allowing me to make the most of my speed and mobility. Set directly in the center of the cuirass was the glowing ether core, the otherwise clear crystal giving off a cool azure light from within. Checking its setting one last time, I made sure that the crystal wouldn't fall out of the socket that I had fashioned for it, pushing and pulling on it as hard as I could. The last thing that I wanted to worry about was to have the item come loose in the middle of a fight and losing its bonuses, or heaven forbid, the ether core itself. Satisfied that it would stay in place, I took a step away from the armor and the table that it was sitting on, seeing its stats appear before me. Twilight Avenger Armor Set. Slots, arm, chest, feet, hands, legs, head, shoulders. Item class, magical. Item quality, good, plus 15%. Armor, 385. Set bonus, 7 out of 7. Strength, plus 12. Agility, plus 12. Armor type, light. Weight, 12 kilograms. Augment, Nefarian Sentinel's Aether Core, plus 3 to all attributes. Favored class, any martial. Level 19.
Well, that turned out pretty great,
I exclaimed, despite noticing that I didn't hit Mastercraft quality on the armor set. Likely since I had reused so much of my old gear. Yet I could hardly be disappointed in the result before me, and I couldn't help but feel a shiver of anticipation for putting it on and seeing the boost that it gave to my attributes. Which is exactly what I promptly did. Practically teleporting myself into the waiting suit of armor, I dressed in what had to be a near-record time, and before I knew it, I had tightened the final strap that kept the gear in place, feeling it hanging almost weightlessly off my body. Moving my limbs around to test the motion of the joints, I gradually became aware of the ether core's presence in the center of my chest, as if it constantly radiated a reassuring wave of energy through my body. Hard to tell if that's just what the crystal is supposed to do, or if that has something to do with me being ether warped, I thought as I touched the crystal with a gloved hand, feeling the energy then flow through my arm. Maybe it's a little bit of both. Putting that particular consideration aside for the future, I stopped my delaying tactics and brought up the majority of my character sheet, looking over all the changes that the last few days had brought. Lyrian Rastler, level 18 Spellsword, human male, Iberian. Statistics, HP, 1,056 out of 1,056. Stamina, 960 out of 960. Mana, 1,277 out of 1,277. Experience to next level. 11,238 out of 38,900. Attributes. Strength, 58 out of 84. Agility, 58 out of 85. Constitution, 56 out of 60. Intelligence, 68 out of 71. Willpower, 23 out of 26. Skills. Magic. Evocation, level 18, 85%. Alteration, level 18, 17%. Conjuration, level 17, 13%. Abjuration, level 17, 1%. Weapons. Unarmed combat, level 18, 78%. Swords, level 19, 82%. Axes, level 11, 35%. Daggers, level 16, 73%. Other. Stealth, level 18, 28%. Wordplay, level 15, 16%. Perception, level 18, 67%. Trade skills. Blacksmithing, level 19, 22%. Carpentry, level 18, 31%. Cartography, level 2, 3%. Tailoring, level 14, 69%. Cooking, level 5, 54%. Herbalism, level 11, 4%. Leatherworking, level 19, 17%. Mining, level 15, 1%. Looks like I've let my other weapon skills and tailoring slip a bit, I commented to myself as I looked over the character sheet. Though hopefully once we get all this sorted out, I can spend some time bringing them up to speed. The same for my magic skills, assuming I can get some of the mages to agree to be my mana batteries while I practice.
Talking to yourself already, Lyrian?
Jenkins' loud and jovial voice interrupted my thoughts, causing me to flinch and spin in the direction of the sound, spotting the smith and Rit entering the crafting area with broad smiles on their faces.
That doesn't seem to be the sign of a healthy mind to me. Perhaps the jungle here is finally starting to get to you.
Talking to yourself is perfectly fine, I replied, matching the man's smile. Just as long as you're not surprised by any of the replies that your mind comes back with.
I suppose that would be troubling.
Jenkins agreed with a chuckle as he eyed my new armor and began nodding appreciatively.
So I see you've been making good use of my space while I was gone. Though I really hope you didn't use up all my fuel.
There's plenty left, I reassured the man as he stepped forward to take a closer look at my new armor. It wasn't exactly my best effort, since I decided to reuse pieces of the chainmail that I had before. But I think it's decent enough to help me push deeper into the jungle. Once we get everything sorted out down here, I was thinking to try and replicate it with the ether-touched iron that we have, after I figure out how to forge it properly.
Wasn't his best effort, he says, as he produces a near flawless work,
Jenkins muttered with a shake of his head as he continued to inspect my work.
I dare say there are many that would love to have this armor in your stead.
One of him being me right here?
Rit exclaimed as he stepped forward to admire my work.
Please tell me you can make more of this kind of armor, Lyrian. That serpentine armor you made last week barely lasted a full day at auction. If I could get a dozen more of these suits, gods, the adventurers would go into a frenzy. I would need die to oversee the exchange, just so I wouldn't get mugged.
I could, I said, tapping on the metal breastplate. But this armor set is pretty metal-intensive. As it was, I used nearly my entire share out of the metal we recovered from the golem, plus a bunch of the scraps that I already had from the other set of armor to put this together. So, unless you're willing to share some of that metal you guys are buying up, I might just have enough to get the core guild members armored up, and they take priority over selling to the rest of the adventurers.
I understand, Lyrian,
Rit replied, his eyes never leaving my armor as he spoke.
And I'm sure, pretty sure, that we can get some of the iron we're buying your way. Huh? For a share of the profits, of course. Jenkins should be able to talk
Oh, hell no, Rit.
Jenkins barked, interrupting the man.
I'm not talking Leandre into anything involving diverting or taking away the metal he needs to finish his work.
But,
Rit started to say before Jenkins cut him off.
But nothing! You saw that man when we handed him the first cart of ore, he nearly cried with joy,
the smith continued, turning away from me as he rounded on the merchant.
Which was nearly the same thing that I did when I first saw what those adventurers pulled out of that damn jungle. We need that metal going to construction a hell of a lot more than we need more suits of armor right now.
I don't disagree, Jenkins, but pretty soon we're going to need ways of paying for all the ore that we're buying.
Rit countered, his tone telling me that this wasn't the first time that he and Jenkins had had this conversation.
Right now, we're buying up everything that's coming in, which is great because we need the metal. But with every day that we do that, it's driving up the market rate that the other adventurers are willing to pay to get metal of their own, all while our total supply of coin dwindles.
I know that, Rit, Jenkins growled. I've dealt with Iberian quartermasters every day during my service. Supply and demand isn't exactly a new mystery for me. Besides, you said you had a solution for that.
I said I might have a solution, and that is likely going to take metal anyway, along with Lyrian's help,
the merchant said, casting a glance in my direction. I was waiting for my name to come up in all of that, I replied dryly, prompting a snort from Jenkins. What do you need from me exactly?
The short version? Rit said. I'll need you to verify and then buy a potential silver vein from an adventurer that discovered it.
And what's the longer version? I asked, feeling my eyebrow raise at Rit's news.
Mostly the same, he answered with a shrug. Yesterday, someone came to me saying that he had found, in our quote, a giant fucking motherload of silver somewhere in the depths of the jungle, and expressed interest that he was willing to sell the location of it if the price was right. He said he has no interest or skill in mining it himself.
And you believe him? I queried while trying to keep my excitement in check.
He swore that it existed in front of the Justicar,
Rit told me with a pointed glance.
If he were lying, Dire would have called him out on it.
Huh, I grunted, taking a moment to process that bit of information. How much does he want for it, then?
He opened it 650 gold pieces,
Rit stated. Yeah, well, he's not going to get that, I grunted, shaking my head at the price. I don't know how Aldford's finances are, but Virtus doesn't have that much coin on hand, even if I bankrupted it.
The town isn't any different, especially since we're buying up as much metal as we can, Rit explained. But I think there's room to negotiate him down to a more reasonable amount.
Which you want Virtus to foot the bill for, after we presumably verify its existence and relative worth, I said, starting to catch on to Rit's plans. Then afterward, you want us to haul it back to Aldford, where my guess is that you're going to want to start mining that silver into coins.
See, I told you Lyrian would understand,
Rit exclaimed, casting a harsh glance at Jenkins before looking back towards me.
But actually, we want Virtus minting those coins, huh? It should help expand your power base within the...
Wait, you want us to start minting our own coins? I felt my brain stop for a moment as I considered what Rit had just said. Can we even do that?
Why wouldn't you be able to?
Jenkins retorted.
Assuming it's the standard size and purity, the silver's value would be the same, regardless of whose stamp is on it. And besides, Aldford is independent of Iberia. It's up to us to manage our own currency.
Not to mention that the amount of hard coinage in the town is fixed, Rit pointed out. Unless we start minting more ourselves, or somehow bridge the distance between Iberia and us to get more through trade, our economy will eventually start to suffer.
I understand that much, I said, nodding slowly at the two men. But creating coins is usually the government's responsibility, not an adventurer's guild.
And Virtus isn't part of Aldford's government?
Rit asked, giving me a resigned look.
If you haven't noticed, Lyrian, Virtus and Aldford are so closely knit that they might as well be one. Not that either of us are complaining of that.
No,
Jenkins added, meeting my eyes as he spoke.
You and yours have done right by us, Lyrian, and Virtus is the only one that we feel we could trust managing something like this. Else it'd just fall to the two of us to manage, which, of course, as you know, would just end up with me doing all the work once Rit got bored.
Hey!
Rit exclaimed in an offended tone. That seems about right, I agreed.
Aye!
Rit repeated in an even louder tone.
I help!
Help create trouble, maybe,
Jenkins grunted, waving a dismissive hand at the young merchant.
Anyway, wasn't there a second part to what you want to ask, Lyrian?
Huh?
Oh, right!
Rit said, shaking off the momentary wave of confusion that crossed his face.
Back to that adventurer that I want you to buy that silver load from. Once you buy it off of him, I need you also to sell him enough of your fancy arms and armor to earn back as much of the coin that you gave him.
Why? I asked, cocking my head at the rather now convoluted request that Rit was laying before me. If he needs equipment, we can just barter.
I don't think he'll go for that. At least not right away,
Rit replied.
But the reason why is because I think he's considering leaving Oldford.
Thus, taking a substantial portion of our gold coin supply out of the local economy. I finished, catching on to Rit's concerns. Okay, I think I see your point now.
Do you think you can manage something like that?
Rit asked.
I know you have enough worrying about this ley line business, but at the same time, we need to start thinking about what will happen if the region doesn't go up in a magical conflagration of death and destruction.
I'll see what I can do, I told the man, despite feeling more of the familiar pressure fall onto my shoulders at this newest development. It was one thing to have to worry about a tangible existential threat to the town, but something very different when faced with an economic one. I simply didn't have a frame of reference for dealing with anything like this. But I'll be honest, though, for this type of negotiation, Constantine would be the better person to handle it.
Whatever works, Lyrian, Rit said with a shrug. You're just the first one I've managed to catch.